more on the Enemy Expatriation Act, and Chuck takes a victory lap next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is my co-host, my Vice Chairman, my good friend, fellow analyst, and today, looking like Tim Tebow running into the end zone after that overtime victory, Chuck Michaelis.
Well, and I am going to take a knee and give thanks to God because he gives us the insights that we need to analyze these things properly. So I will not take credit for this. I will take a victory lap, but I'll do it to honor my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, because he's the one who basically opened my eyes to the fact that I spent 3 days last week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, talking about Supreme Court decisions that preempt the National Defense Authorization Act and actually preempt this S-1698 HR, I can't remember the number.
3166.
And this is a way that they are attempting, the people who would like very much to negate ex-party Merriman and ex-party Milligan. They know they've got those giant stumbling blocks in their way. Now, I mentioned last week, very quickly, another Supreme Court case, another ex-party case, that people are trying to use to justify this law, and that's ex-party Quirin. And I mentioned this really quickly, too, so this is another part of the victory lap. The fact is that ex-party Quirin covers enemy combatants who were landed by submarine as saboteurs in the United States from Germany in civilian clothing with false identification. That made them what is known in international law as illegal combatants. Illegal combatants have nothing to do with United States citizens born on this soil who commit treasonous acts. You cannot be stripped constitutionally of your citizenship. You can be punished for your crimes, but you cannot really be stripped of your citizenship. This thing violates not only Article 3, but it violates at least three of the amendments in the Bill of Rights. It definitely violates Article 5. It definitely violates Article 6. It definitely violates Article 7. And it definitely violates Article 8. So we've got this lawlessness, and this is a victory lap that's actually rather subdued. Because, yes, we have discovered what's going on, but the bad part is nothing is being done to stop it. So that's what's keeping my little victory lap a little subdued. Yes, I uncovered the problem, but no, we haven't been able to stop Leviathan from completing what he started.
Well, you know, Chuck, I took a chance to take a look at Ex Parte Quirin, which was a case decided by the United States Supreme Court in 1942. And it's interesting because in part of the decision, Harlan Stone was the Chief Justice on this, and he wrote the majority opinion in this case, and he talks in part about the law of war, and that the law of war draws a distinction between the armed forces and the peaceful populations of belligerent nations, and also between those who are lawful and unlawful combatants. And that's the phrase they use, is unlawful combatants. Now, it's interesting to note that one of the conspirators in what was called Operation Pastorius, because that was the landing of Germans on, you know, by submarine on American soil, was actually an American citizen, Herbert Hans Haupt, who actually was only one of the eight who was an American citizen. But the point is that they basically said that a military tribunal could be captured, what they would consider an unlawful combatant, could be subject to capture and detention, but they're also subject to trial and punishment. Now, there's the whole point, trial and punishment. It didn't say that basically they could be whisked off without any type of formal process being undertaken, because when you talk about a trial, even with a military tribunal, there is the opportunity of having counsel and being able to defend your actions. That's not the case with the combination we have now of the provisions of the NDAA and this potential Enemy Expatriation Act.
Well, that's absolutely right. What is happening here is that defendants are being stripped. Let's put it this way. Even illegal combatants have the right to some kind of a trial, not necessarily to be held indefinitely and just allowed to rot in a dog cage. The fact is that they have the right to some form of trial, and if they have acted as an illegal combatant, then normally the penalty is execution. It's either execution or life in prison or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the whole point is, why would we deny not only enemy combatants the right to a trial, but United States citizens to be stripped of their citizenship and then denied the right to a trial. This makes no sense, Barry. Well, and in fact, it's unbridled tyranny.
It is, but I'll tell you why it makes a little bit of sense. As I did a little research here on ex parte querying, and I'm not sure if you saw this or not, but even though it was a pure per curiam opinion, which meant that it came from the entire court, there was some dissension, and part of it was brought by Justice Robert H. Jackson, and where Jackson himself started writing his own brief, a draft opinion in this case, because he disagreed with the majority opinion, although at the end of it, he swallowed and decided not to oppose it. But he just continued to write this opinion because he had a different view of the War Powers Act. As a matter of fact, he was famous for his concurrence in the Youngstown Sheet and Tube versus Sawyer case, which I think we've talked a little bit about on this program before. And he basically, this is Jackson's idea. He thinks that the executive office of the president, that one, he has the inherent authority to create military tribunals. That number two, that this authority could not be regulated by Congress. And that three, the power was by virtue of his power as commander in chief. So in other words, if you take the philosophy of Justice Jackson, which has actually been floated in this decade dealing with issues of the war on terror and legal opinions that have come back and forth about the legality of holding enemy combatants in undisclosed locations or the whole idea of Guantanamo and everything that's going on there. It's looking as if Jackson's philosophy that came out of ex parte querying is really getting down to the point that if the president, as commander-in-chief, believes it's necessary, nothing is outside the bounds for them to do in order to prosecute against an enemy. This isn't the first time in our country that this has happened. You know, I want to point out real quick, for those of you, if you want an interesting movie that's both popular but also kind of gets at the heart of some of these things, maybe unintentionally, I was just talking with Chuck about this off air. It's a movie called The Conspirator. James McAvoy, Robin Wright, and a number of others. It's an ensemble cast. But it's basically a movie that tells the story about the trial of Mary Surratt, who was accused of conspiring with John Wilkes Booth to assassinate President Abraham Lincoln. And there's so much in that movie that you sit back and say, okay, I'm sitting here in 2012, and this was in 1865, and these issues are still here. These are the same issues that we're now dealing with NDAA and the Enemy Expatriation Act. Ladies and gentlemen, find it. Get it on video. I got it out of the library. I'm sure you can get it on Netflix or other places. Watch this movie and watch it carefully in light of what we're talking about here.
Oh, definitely. Because what you'll basically find is, and what's interesting about that case is that one of the conspirators in the Lincoln assassination was arrested outside of the District of Columbia and therefore did not have to go through a military tribunal like Surratt did. And the outcome was somewhat different.
Exactly.
And this has been our point all along with these things. Everybody is trying to bypass the normal judiciary, the normal justice system in this country, to apply some form of military justice. Now, I'm really shocked that the major sponsor for this bill in the Senate is Senator Joe Lieberman. And I'll be quite honest, because he is of the Jewish faith. And the fact is that anybody who has any grasp of history of World War II at all understands that one of the first things that was done to the Jews before they were allowed to be shipped off to camps was they were stripped of their German citizenship.
That's exactly right.
And the fact that the reasons that were given for stripping of them of their German citizenship was disloyalty. Jews were basically not primarily loyal to the government of Germany. They were primarily loyal to Judaism. And so this is an extremely dangerous precedent that's being set here. And one can see the day when anyone who's critical of the government is suddenly a combatant.
Or is engaging in, as I said, because that language is undefined in this particular bill, they were purposefully and materially supporting hostilities against the United States. It's that idea of purposefully supporting. And the question is, who defines what's purposeful who defines what's material? Basically, if you go by what's been happening lately with the amount of authority that's being ceded over to the executive office of the president, you know, and looking at the philosophy as we talked about coming out of Ex Parte Querin, you have a situation where you may have one individual who gets to call all the shots, who gets to make all the judgment calls, who gets to be the objectivity of the subjective. Chuck, that's extremely dangerous. Now, I think you and I both, there's a video on YouTube from Congressman Charles Dent. It's a little 3-minute clip, and I think if we've got time, we should play it for our listeners, talking about his reasons why he's so happy that he's introduced the Enemy Expatriation Act. And honestly, Charles, I hate to say to our audience, we told you so, but we did tell you so. His excuse? We don't want more Anwar al-Awlakis. Well, you know what? We don't either. We don't want American citizens who you haven't tried before the court and found to be treasonous to be executed, which is ultimately stripping them not only of their citizenship, but their life, because of a military, not even the military, this was the CIA's decision that he was a quote-unquote enemy combatant.
Now, real quick, I want to point out that this bill, both the Senate and the House versions, are not getting a whole lot of traction yet. In fact, in the Senate version has one co-sponsor. Now, this should be very disappointing to those of you Tea Party folks who got hoodwinked into giving money to Scott Brown's campaign, because the only co-sponsor in the Senate is Scott Brown. So Scott Brown just basically can't wait to have the opportunity to send all those people who helped get him elected to the Senate off to Guantanamo Bay. I think we should play that Congressman Dent's video, and I will put it on right now. Here is Congressman Dent.
Hello, I'm Congressman Charlie Dent. I'm proud to be the sponsor of the bipartisan Enemy Expatriation Act, which I introduced in the House this week, along with Representative Jason Altmaier of Western Pennsylvania. Identical legislation was also introduced in the Senate by Senator Joe Lieberman, chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, and Senator Scott Brown of Massachusetts. With the recent death of U.S.-born radical cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, the sanctity of American citizenship and its crucial role in our dialogue regarding national security is now garnering increased and bipartisan attention in both chambers of Congress. I am hopeful this renewed attention will increase the awareness of and support for the Enemy Expatriation Act. The bipartisan legislation I introduced this week calls for a pragmatic recognition that a person who is purposefully and materially supporting acts of terror against the United States is demonstrating that they have no intent in acting as a U.S. citizen. If they want to engage in hostilities against the American people, then they clearly no longer wish to be a citizen of our great nation. Notably, this legislation would only modify an existing statute or law which has already been found constitutional by the United States Supreme Court. Currently, an individual who engages in hostilities against the United States on behalf of an armed force of a foreign state has committed an expatriating act. Our legislation clarifies that engaging in hostilities by supporting terrorism would also constitute an expatriating act. Decades ago, the greatest threat to our national security was posed by foreign states, including Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan. Today, however, international terrorist networks like Al-Qaeda have equaled and in some cases exceeded the threat posed by any foreign state currently hostile to the United States. Simply put, this bill modernizes the process by which the citizenship status an individual engaged in hostilities against the American people is examined by treating terrorists in the same manner as a U.S. citizen who marched through the Third Reich decades ago. I believe it is time Congress update existing law to reflect the modern threat of global terrorism. Let me be clear. The bill does not modify the prerequisite that a defendant must be found to have voluntarily relinquished his citizenship. I believe being an American citizen is more than a right. It is a responsibility. When individuals such as Anwar al-Awlaki take actions that are proven threats against the United States, they violate that responsibility, and our nation should respond in an appropriate manner. While we don't want fear to govern our daily lives, the failed terrorist attack in Times Square in May 2010, along with the attempted attack on Flight 253 on Christmas Day 2009, are grim reminders that we are fighting a war against terrorists aiming to dismantle American ideals and our way of life. We cannot and we will not allow them to triumph. I anticipate that the introduction of this bipartisan legislation will urge Congress to move quickly to amend our current law in a manner that reflects the global conflict that we face today.
Wow, Chuck, I mean, what can you say? He's totally gung-ho about taking away the rights of American citizens. Honestly, I understand, and I don't want people to consider us not to be patriotic and not to be concerned about the things that could be going on in our country, but again, even as Benjamin Franklin was famously quoted as saying, those who would give up essential liberty for a little security deserve neither liberty nor security. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're giving up essential liberty for a little false security. And as a matter of fact, there would be no security whatsoever if this went to what could be possibly a logical extreme and what we've seen happen in other times and other places in our history.
And with that, we are basically completely out of time. Tune in tomorrow for another Principles and Policies, and thanks for being with us.